Chapter 12. The Pike. There was talk of strangeness all across the plains. There was the rowing boat belonging to the old man who lived in a shack just below the waterfall. It rowed itself away so fast, people said, that it skipped over the water like a dragonfly. But there was no one inside it. It was found tied up at Two Shirts, where the river ran under the coach road. But then the overnight mail coach that had been waiting outside the inn ran away by itself, with all the mailbags left behind. The coachman borrowed a horse to give chase, and found the coach in the shadow of the chalk, with all the doors open and one horse missing. The horse was returned a couple of days later by a well-dressed young man who said he'd found it wandering. Surprisingly, then, it looked well-fed and groomed. Very, very thick would be the best way to describe the walls of the castle. There were no guards at night because they locked up at 8 o'clock and went home. Instead, there was old Robbins, who'd once been a guard and was now officially the night watchman. But everyone knew he fell asleep in front of the fire by 9. He had an old trumpet that he was supposed to blow if there was an attack, although no one was entirely sure what this would achieve. Roland slept in the Heron Tower, because it was up a long flight of steps that his aunts didn't much like climbing. It also had very, very thick walls, and this is just as well, because at 11 o'clock, someone stuck a trumpet against his ear and blew on it hard. He leapt out of bed, got caught in the eiderdown, slipped on a mat that covered the freezing stone floor, banged his head on the cupboard, and managed to light a candle with the third desperately struck match. On the little table by his bed was a pair of huge bellows with old Robbins's trumpet stuck in the business end. The room was empty, except for the shadows. "I've got a sword, you know," he said, "and I know how to use it." "Ach, you did already," said a voice from the ceiling. "Chopty tiny wee pieces in your bed while you snored like a hog." "Only joking, you can. None of us mean you any harm." There was some hurried whispering in the darkness of the rafters, and then the voice continued, "Wee correction there. Most of us dinna mean you any harm, but dinna fash yourself about Big Jan. He disna like anybody very much." "Who are you?" "Aye, there you go again, getting it all wrong," said the voice conversationally. "I'm up here and heavily armed, you ken, while you're doing there in your wee nighty, making a bonny target. And you think you're the one who asks the questions. So you know how to fight, do you?" "Yes. So you'll fight monsters to save the big wee hag, will you?"
"The big wee hag?
That's Tiffany to ye."
"You mean Tiffany Aching? What's happened to her?"
"You'll be ready for her when she needs you."
"Yes, of course. Who are you?"
"And you know how to fight. I've read the manual of swordsmanship all the way through."
After a few seconds, the voice from the high shadows said,
"Ah, I think I put my finger on a wee flaw in this plan."
There was an armory across the castle courtyard. It wasn't much of one. There was a suit of armour made of various non-matching pieces, a few swords, a battle-axe that no one had ever been able to lift, and a chainmail suit that appeared to have been attacked by extremely strong moths. And there were some wooden dummies on big springs for sword practice. Right now, the Feagles were watching Roland attack one with a great deal of enthusiasm.
"Ach, weel," said Big Jan despondently as Roland leapt about. "If he never meets anything other than bits of wood that dinna fight back, he might be okay."
"He's willing," Rob Anybody pointed out, as Roland put his foot against the dummy and tried to tug the sword point out of it.
"Oh, aye," Big Jan looked glum.
"He's got a bonny action, you must admit," said Rob.
Roland succeeded in pulling the sword out of the dummy, which sprang back on its ancient spring and hit him on the head. Blinking a little, the boy looked down at the Feagles. He remembered them from the time he was rescued from the Queen of the Elves. No one who met the Nac Mac Feagles ever forgot them, even if they tried hard. But it was all vague. He'd been near crazy part of the time, and unconscious, and had seen so many strange things that it was hard to know what was real and what wasn't. Now he knew. They were real. Who'd make up a thing like this? Okay. One of them was a cheese that rolled around of its own accord, but nobody was perfect. "What am I going to have to do, Mr. Anybody?" he asked. Rob Anybody had been worried about this bit. Words like underworld can give people the wrong idea.
"You must rescue a lady," he said. "Not the big wee hag.
Another lady. We can take you to the place where she bides. It's like underground, you can. She's like sleeping. And all you had to do is bring her up to the surface kind of thing.
Oh, you mean like Orfeo rescuing Unifon from the underworld, said Roland.
Rob Anybody just stared.
It's a myth from Ithibi, Roland went on. It's supposed to be a love story, but it's really a metaphor for the annual return of summer. There's a lot of versions of that story.
They still stared. Feagles have very worrying stares. They're even worse than chickens in that respect.
Work.
A metaphor is a kind of lie to help people understand what's true, said Billy Big Chin, but this didn't help much.
And he won her freedom by playing beautiful music, Roland added. I think he played a lute, or maybe it was a lyre.
Ach, weel, that'll suit us fine, said Daft Willy. We're experts at luting and then lying about it.
They're musical instruments, said Billy Big Chin. He looked up at Roland.
Can you play one, mister?
My aunts have a piano, said Roland doubtfully, but I'll get into real trouble if anything happens to it. They'll tear the walls down.
Sods it is, then, said Rob Anybody reluctantly.
Have you never fought against a real person, mister?
No. I wanted to practice with the guards, but my aunts won't let them.
But you have used a sword before.
Roland looked embarrassed.
Not lately. Not as such.
Not at all, in fact. My aunts say.
So, how do you practice? Asked Rob in horror.
Well, there's a big mirror in my room, you see, and I can practice the actual...
Roland began, stopping when he saw their expressions.
Sorry, he added. I don't think I'm the type you're looking for.
Oh, I wouldna say that, said Rob Anybody wearily. According to the Hag o' Hags, you're just a laddie. You just need someone to fight with.
Big Yan, always suspicious, looked at his brother and followed his gaze to the battered suit of armour.
Oh, aye, he growled. Weel, I'm no gonna be a knee.
The next day was a good day, right up to the point where it became a tight little bowl of terror. Tiffany got up early and lit the fires. When her mother came down, she was scrubbing the kitchen floor very hard.
Aren't you supposed to do that sort of thing by magic, dear? Said her mother, who'd never really got the hang of what witchcraft was all about.
No, mum, I'm supposed not to, said Tiffany, still scrubbing.
But can't you just wave your hand and make all the dirt fly away, then?
The trouble is getting the magic to understand what dirt is, said Tiffany, scrubbing hard at a stain.
I heard of a witch over in Escrow who got it wrong and ended up losing the entire floor and her sandals and nearly a toe.
Mrs. Aching backed away. I thought you just had to wave your hands about, she mumbled nervously.
That works, said Tiffany, but only if you wave them about on the floor with a scrubbing brush.
She finished the floor. She cleaned under the sink. She opened all the cupboards, cleaned them out, and put everything back. She cleaned the table, and then turned it over and cleaned it underneath. She even washed the bottoms of the legs where they touched the floor. It was then that Mrs. Aching went and found things to do somewhere, because this was clearly not just about good housekeeping. It wasn't. As Granny Weatherwax once said, if you wanted to walk around with your head in the air, then you needed to have both feet on the ground. Scrubbing floors, cutting wood, washing clothes, making cheese, these things grounded you, taught you what was real. You could set a small part of your mind to them, giving your thoughts time to line up and settle down. Was she safe here from the Wintersmith? Was here safe from the Wintersmith? Sooner or later, she'd have to face him again, a snowman who thought he was human and had the power of the avalanche. Magic could only slow him down for a while and make him angry. No ordinary weapon would work, and she didn't have many extraordinary ones. Anagramma had gone for him in a rage. Tiffany wished she could be that angry. She'd have to go back and thank her, too. Anagramma was going to be all right, at least. People had seen her turn into a screaming green-skinned monster. They could respect a witch like that. Once you got respect, you'd got everything. She'd have to try to see Roland, too. She didn't know what to say. That was kind of all right, because he wouldn't know what to say either. They could spend whole afternoons together, not knowing what to say.
He was probably in the castle right now. As she cleaned under the seat of a chair, she wondered what he was doing. There was a hammering on the door of the armoury. That was the aunt's for you. The door was four thicknesses of oak and iron, but they banged on it anyway.
"We will not tolerate this waywardness," said Aunt Danuta.
There was a crash from the other side of the door.
"Are you fighting in there?"
"No, I'm writing a flute sonata," shouted Roland. Something heavy hit the door. Aunt Danuta pulled herself together. She looked like Miss Tick in general outline, but with the eyes of the perpetually offended and the mouth of an instant complainer.
"If you don't do as you're told, I will tell your father," she began, and stopped when the door was yanked open.
Roland had a cut on his arm, his face was red, sweat was dripping off his chin, and he was panting. He raised his sword in a trembling hand. Behind him, on the other side of the grey room, was a suit of very battered armour. It turned its helmet to look at the aunts. This made a squeaking noise.
"If you dare disturb my father," Roland said as they stared at it, "I shall tell him about the money that's being taken out of the big chest in the strong room. Don't lie."
For a moment, a blink would have missed it. Aunt Danuta's face had guilt written on it, but it vanished with speed.
"How dare you! Your dear mother is dead!" shouted Roland, and slammed the door.
The helmet's visor was pushed up, and half a dozen Feagles peered out.
"Crevens, what a pair of old corbies," said Big Jan.
"My aunt's," said Roland darkly.
"What's the corby?" "It's like a big old crow that hangs around, waiting for someone to die," said Billy Big Chin.
"Ah, then you've met them before," said Roland with a glint in his eye.
"Let's have another go, shall we? I think I'm getting the hang of it."
There was a grumble of protests from every part of the armour, but Rob Anybody shouted it down.
"All right, we'll give the lad one more chance," he said. "Get to your posts."
There were clangs and much swearing as the Feagles climbed around inside the suit. But after a few seconds, the armour seemed to pull itself together. It picked up a sword and lumbered toward Roland, who could hear the muffled orders coming from inside. The sword swung, but in one quick movement he deflected it, stepped sideways, swung his own sword in a blur, and chopped the suit in half with a clang that echoed around the castle. The top part hit the wall, the bottom half just rocked, still standing. After a few seconds, a lot of small heads slowly rose above the iron trousers.
"Was that supposed to happen?" Roland said. "Is everyone, whole?"
A quick count revealed that there were indeed no half-Feagles, although there was a lot of bruising, and Daft Woolly had lost his spog. A lot of Feagles were walking in circles and banging at their ears with their hands, though. It had been a very loud clang.
"No bad effort at that time," said Rob Anybody vaguely. "You seem to be getting the knowing of the fighting."
"It definitely seemed better, didn't it?" said Roland, looking proud.
"Shall I have another go?"
"No, no, said Rob.
"No, I reckon that's enough for today."
Roland glanced up at the little barred window high in the wall.
"Yes, I'd better go and see my father," he said, and the glow in his face faded.
"It's well past lunchtime. If I don't see him every day, he forgets who I am." When the boy had gone, the Feagles looked at one another.
"That lad is no having an easy life right now," said Rob Anybody. "You've got to admit he's getting better," said Billy Big Chin.
"Oh, aye, I'll warrant he's no such a bunty as I thought. But that sword is far tae heavy for him, and it'll take weeks to get him any good," said Big Jan. "How he got weeks, Rob?"
Rob Anybody shrugged.
"Who can tell?" he said. "He's going to be the hero, come what may. The big wee hag'll meet the Wintersmith soon enough. She canna fight that. It's like the Hag o' Hags says. You canna fight a story as old as that. It'll find a way."
He cupped his hands.
"Come on, lads. Away to the mound. We'll come back tonight. Maybe you can't make a hero all in one go."
Tiffany's little brother was old enough to want to be considered older still, which is a dangerous ambition on a busy working farm, where there are big hoofed horses and sheep dips and 101 other places where a small person might not be noticed until it's too late. But most of all, he liked water. When you couldn't find him, he was usually down by the river fishing. He loved the river, which was a bit surprising since a huge green monster had once leapt out of it to eat him. However, Tiffany had hit it in the mouth with an iron frying pan. since he'd been eating sweets at the time, Wentworth's only comment afterward had been, "Tiffy hit fish, go bang." But he did seem to be growing up as a skilled angler. He was fishing this afternoon. He'd found the knack of knowing where the monsters were. The really big pike lurked in the deep black holes, thinking slow, hungry thoughts, until Wentworth's silver lure dropped almost into their mouths. When Tiffany went to call him in, she met him staggering up the path, much dishevelled, and carrying a fish that looked as if it weighed at least half as much as he did. "It's a big one," he shouted as soon as he saw her. "Abe reckoned it was touching under fallen willow, you know. He said they'll snap at anything this time of year. It pulled me over, but I held on. Must weigh at least 30 pounds. "About 20, thought Tiffany, but fish are always much heavier to the man who catches them. "Well done. But come on in, it's going to freeze," she said.
"Can I have it for supper? It took ages to get it in the net. It's at least 35 pounds, Wentworth said, struggling under the load.
Tiffany knew better than to offer to carry it. That would be an insult. "No, it has to be cleaned and soaked for a day, and Mum's done stew for tonight. But I'll cook it for you tomorrow with ginger sauce."
"And there'll be enough for everyone," said Wentworth happily, "because it weighs at least 40 pounds.
"Easily," Tiffany agreed. And that night, after the fish had been duly admired by everyone and found to weigh 23 pounds, with Tiffany's hand on the scales helping it along a bit, she went into the scullery and cleaned the fish. Which was a nice way of talking about pulling out or cutting off everything that you shouldn't eat, which, if Tiffany had her way, meant the whole fish. She didn't much like pike, but a witch should never turn up her nose at food, especially free food, and at least a good sauce would stop it tasting of pike. Then, as she was tipping the innards into the pig bucket, she saw the glint of silver. Well, you couldn't exactly blame Wentworth for being too excited to extract the lure. She reached down and pulled out, covered with slime and scales but very recognisably itself, the silver horse. There should have been a roll of thunder. There was just Wentworth, in the next room, telling for the 10th time about the heroic capture of the monster fish. There should have been a rush of wind. Barely a draught disturbed the candles. But he knew she'd touched it. She felt his shock. She went to the door. As she opened it, a few snowflakes fell, but as if suddenly happy to have an audience, more began to pour down, until with no sound but a hiss, the night turned white. She held out her hand to catch some flakes and looked at them very closely. Little icy Tiffany's melted away. Oh yes, he had found her. Her mind went cold, but crystal reels of thought spun fast. She could take a horse. No, she'd not get far on a night like this. She should have kept that broomstick. She shouldn't have danced. There was nowhere to run to. She'd have to face him again, and face him here, and stop him dead. In the mountains, with their black forests, endless winter was hard to imagine. It was easier here. And because it was easier, it was worse. Because he was bringing winter into her heart. She could feel it growing colder. But the snow was inches deep already in this short time. She was a shepherd's daughter before she was a witch, and at this time, in this place, there were more immediate things to do. She went into the golden warmth and light of the kitchen and said, "Dad, we must see to the flock."